Not.
No, you just get the best part. Whatever's available.
You left off in the previous year, talking about different kinds of fruit in terms of which fruit are subject to an issur deraisa schita, squeezing out, and which fruit are only asur midrabanan, and perhaps which fruit are actually mutlak achila. We said that what's the difference whether something is asur deraisa, asur midrabanan, and we're not going to do it anyway. So we mentioned at the end of the shiur last time that there are certain machloksim, certain shayas, and sfeikas that come up that it's important for us to know whether we're dealing with a deraisa or a derabanan. So one of the issues that we raised at the end of the shiur was about the issue of mashke velos of ochol ochodami. The Gemara quotes an opinion that says the one is allowed to squeeze a fruit as long as you're squeezing directly onto the food. If the goal of the squeezing is to enhance the food, the solid food, then the halacha doesn't view that liquid as really a juice. It's just considered to be cutting up an apple, cutting up a fruit. So we said that not everyone agrees to that. So machloek is in the Gemara, machloek is Rishon the Paskin. So even though we may ikar din paskin, that that's okay. Many paskin write that by the arises we should try to refrain from that. So therefore we wouldn't use this kula, squeezing grapes, squeezing olives, but anything that's only a derabon anyway, so we would be much more comfortable squeezing. That's what we do, that's just squeezing lemons, things which we normally assume are problematic to squeeze. Well, our minhag, at least Ashkenazic communities, is we wouldn't squeeze lemons like l'chatchila on Shabbos, but we would squeeze them onto a piece of fish or onto a salad or something like that, as long as you're squeezing directly onto the food, so we would hope that that's okay. Since the worst case scenario is by derabbanan anyway, by derabbanan we can rely on the opinion of Mor Rishonim that mashke bosach ochol is in fact permissible. Another example that comes up of this possible distinction between deraisa squeezing and derabbanan squeezing is the person who's not really intending on squeezing, they're really intending on eating the food, but in the process of eating the fruit, they're going to inevitably squeeze. So let's say a person wants to eat a grapefruit, so a person sticks a spoon, that I happen not to like grapefruits, but if you stick your spoon down into a grapefruit, and what my understanding is that sometimes we get a squirt, we get a splash into the, hopefully not the other person's face. So what's the din? Are you allowed to eat the grapefruit on Shabbos knowing full well that you're going to squeeze out the fruit in the process? So at first glance, we would like to hide behind Dovrshet Miskavin, that I'm not intending on squeezing out the fruit, I'm intending on eating the fruit. The problem is, you have to try it a few times before Shabbos, and my experts tell me that it may be really a psik resha, that most of the time it probably does squeeze out, you press the spoon down so it does spritz out a little bit, so that falls into the category of a psik resha. So Modur Pshum psik resha, as we've spoken about many times, that Dovrshet Miskavin is mutter, that's when you don't know whether the malacha is going to happen, but if you know, you're fairly certain the malacha is going to happen, that's a problem. So the only possible kula we can hide behind is that it's a psikresha de lo nichale. Why is it a psikresha lo nichale? Because I'm not particularly interested in the juice squeezing out. So maybe a psikresha lo nichale is not so bad. So we spoke about that also at great length, that we don't like to be makel so quickly on a psikresha de lo nichale. But we are a little bit more makel because it's a psikresha lo nichale and a derabonon. If you're willing to treat grapefruits, squeezing out grapefruits as only a derabonon, so then maybe we could be a little bit more lenient because the psikresha lo nichle on nisat rabbanon. We've already said in the past, and even that we're not thrilled about. The Rambam wasn't so thrilled about that either. The Rambam said that a psikresha lo nichle even on rabbanon is potentially problematic. So if you remember back from a couple of months ago, we developed a cloud. The Rambam develops a cloud that a psikresha lo nichle on a double rabbanon, that's not so bad. So maybe we could knock down squeezing grapefruit to a double rabbanon. How can we do that? First of all, it's a grapefruit, so it's not tasty enough, it's not olives and grapes, so it's a derabanan for that. Number two, it's shalei kederach. The normal way to squeeze a grapefruit is not to press down with a spoon. So maybe that's called the psikresh, lo nichla, and a double derabanan, so we could salvage that. So just in case you want to continue to eat the grapefruit, the shmir sham shukhos was mako, based on that razzle dazzle lump, the psikresh, lo nichla, and double derabanan, so everything is okay. But where's the juice squeezing out to? The juice is by squeezing out to the other person's face. I mean, it's squeezing.
Squeezing
out of the plate. Oh, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay, we have to get to that. That's the second half. Okay, so I haven't eaten a grapefruit in my entire life. I'm trying to help those people who like the grapefruits. Okay, we're going to talk about mashke shazal, but that's going to lead that into our next topic. Somebody just asked me the other day, they said that they were at somebody's house last Shabbos, not by Christmas, at somebody's house last Shabbos, and somehow they started to talk about like Hilchos Shabbos in general, and the person said to them, you know, they don't understand, and when you learn about Shabbos, so you start learning about the Lachos of Zareya, who does Zareya, Bizman, we're not farmers, what do we care about Zareya, what do we care about Choresh, what do we care about Kotzer, it doesn't speak to us. In 2019, these malachas don't speak to us anymore. Why are we wasting our time learning these malachas? That was the question. So this poor Talmud came to speak to me and said, what do I answer this person? How do I respond back to this person? So I gave him multiple ammunition to respond back. So one of the things I pointed out to him was, is that It's true that most of us probably don't plant all the time, but all the yesodas, all the basic principles that are developed in the malacha of Zareya are the malachas that govern everything. I said, this particular person was telling me that he was at the person's house and the shadow came about walking past the censer on Shabbos. So I told him, explain to the person next time that the issue of walking past the censer is learned out from the sugya about planting and plowing and harvesting on Shabbos. It's all the same thing. So sometimes, Bizman Chazal, they were very, very focused on mice and certain malachas. And then Bizman Hazel, we may spend more time focused on different malachas, but the principles are all the same. So you have to learn how to extrapolate from one malacha to the next. So to over here, that the original discussion about squeezing out grapefruits about psikreishas, lonichla, and those Rabban had to do with plowing and plantings, things which are not that relevant for most of us. But the yesodos are the same, and now we just try to plug them in properly. So the maisa, whether or not we are makel on regular psikreishas, lonichla, and the Rabbanans, when you have a double Rabbanan, you can pretty much be makel. Again, this is all assuming that the grapefruits are the Rabbanan. Unless you throw a curveball at us, we spoke about 2 weeks ago, maybe grapefruits are deraisa. Maybe all fruits that are miyuchad lekach to be squeezed are deraisa. Maybe all juices bezmanas are deraisa. So we threw that out as a possibility, but I don't know how much we have to really be chashish for that in these kinds of cases. There's another case that comes up in terms of skikas peiros. What if a person wants to suck out juice? You want to take an orange and you intend to suck on the core of the orange or something. Is that considered to be equivalent of schitas peiros? That was a machlekes aposkim. So some poskim said, that's not called schitas peiros, that's called achilas peiros. That's called derech achila b'kach. It's like Moshe Lema Davidoma, when we get to the malach of borer, so we're going to talk about borer in one's mouth. And generally speaking, any borer that takes place in your own mouth is not considered to be a borer. So some poskim say, also anything that happens in your mouth is not called schit. If you're just eating, that's called derech achila. That's not considered to be schit. And others say no. Others say, if you would have the fruit mamish inside your mouth, look out, a person's eating, you eat a grape, so when you're chewing on a grape, we assume that's okay. It's multiple grapes on Shabbos. So when you're chewing on a grape and some of the juice is coming out, that's perfectly okay. But if you're holding the grape and sucking on the grape, so maybe that's not called malacha b'peh, that's called malacha b'yadayim. So that's a very, very fine line. So the poskim say that depends what kind of fruit you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a deraisa thick of fruit, you have a grape, so it's probably better not to suck a grape on Shabbos, just eat the grape normally. If you're dealing with an orange, which may be deraisa, and you're dealing with things that are only the rabbanon, so then one can be a little bit more makel. So again, you have a lot of these kinds of shas and chaschita that are questionable whether these activities fall in the category of schita. And then we usually take this approach that when we're dealing with deraisas, we tend to be machmir like usual. When we're dealing with rabbanon, we tend to be lenient like usual. But then you have that all gray area as to what exactly deraisa, what's rabbanon. So Zman Chazal, grapes and olives were the only deraisas. That was the only really, really normal grapes to squeeze. Whether or not we treat oranges and grapefruits and all those other fruits as chashash of deraisas or not, so that depends on some of the things we spoke about in the past. So there got to be a lot of these shilas. You could probably be a little bit more lahoptal on many of these kinds of issues. So now we move on to the next issue relating to Schitas Peiros. A shayla that really, really comes up, these kinds of shaylas really do come up, Judah already touched on it about the grapefruit juice, and that's the issue of, I didn't do Schitas Peiros, I didn't squeeze out the fruit, but the fruit squeezed out by itself. This is the point where we always get to that point. I'm not sure when to say squeeze the squoze or whatever the right word is, but whatever you get the point. So when the juice comes out of a fruit, so by itself, what is the status of that? What's the status of that? Should we have to go? What could possibly be problematic about it? So this is what the Mishnah tells us, and the Gemara, the Beginning of Masechus Beitza, referred to as well. There was a special gezeira at the Rabbanan. There was a takhanat that Chama made. It's a gezeira called Mashkin Shezavu. The Chazal were concerned that if a person is going to drink the juice that came out by itself, so he's going to taste, ooh, this is yummy, delicious juice. My God, this is delicious tasting juice. Let me go ahead and continue to squeeze some more juice, which of course would be a violation of schita. So it's a gezeira, shema yischal, Chazal prohibited across the board. It's called mashin shazabal. So even though nothing happened, nobody did anything wrong, it happened totally by itself, it doesn't matter. Any juice that oozes out on its own on Shabbos is problematic. So this becomes very, very real shayla. There are a lot of applications. There are real shaylas in this, and then there are applications of this. And this gezeira d'rabbanan begins to take on a life in of itself. So that's really our next sugya, how to understand the parameters of this gezeira d'rabbanan called mashkin shezavu. The Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbos quotes a machlekes hatanaim, just how far did Chazal go in this gezeira? What if I have food that's omer be'achila? Let's say I have particular fruits, but I wasn't really planning on squeezing. People don't generally drink those juices. I'm planning on eating this fruit. And then the Gemara says, then the Gezerah doesn't apply. The Gezerah only makes sense when you have things that are omer lekach lemashkin. If you have grapes and olives, those are always omer lekach lemashkin. And if you have an orange or a grapefruit or something, it depends what your kavana is. If you were planning on squeezing the juice at some point, and now some juice oozed out by itself, that would be problematic. If you're planning on eating the grapefruit, and then just a little bit of the juice came out by itself, that would not pose a problem. So the response to the question of Judah was, it's okay, you're allowed to drink the juice. Again, if you mamish intentionally squeezed out the juice, that's a problem. That's a malach on Shabbos. But if it just happened in the process of eating, and we permitted to do it through the process of eating, because of psikration, or nikolai, on a double drabonim, the fact that now you have a little bit of juice on the bottom, and now you want to go ahead and drink that juice, the grapefruit is primarily made for the purpose of eating. You were planning on eating. You didn't sit down and have a cup of grapefruit juice. You're eating a grapefruit, and now you have a little bit of juice left on the bottom. That would not be subject to the gezeira of mashin shizavu. Well, if you really did it for that purpose, if that's really what you, if you really had that agenda of doing it, that would be a problem. So you have to be honest as to what your kavanah is. If they really corner you and ask you, what did that grapefruit juice come out? So if it came out because you really wanted it, so then, look, then you violate the Yisrael Shechit. If not, then you enjoy grapefruit juice. Most people first bump into this Gezeirah D'Rabban, Mashi Shazavu, not necessarily where it appears in Shas, but it appears in Shas in the Kuf Mem, in the Masechta Shabbos. It's assuming you made 140 blood into Masechta Shabbos and still alive to tell the story. But people more often bump into it in Masechta Beitza, because it appears in the Beis, in the Gimel Masechta Beitza. What the world's doing in Masechta Beitza? In a very, very strange application, one of the most bizarre applications of Mashi Shazavu. There's the very first Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, a famous Mishnah, says, Beitza should only be Yontif also. You're not allowed to eat an egg that was laid on Yontif. So it's not clear why that's so. So there are four different approaches in the Amoraim as to why exactly that issur exists. You could spend a long, long time just on trying to figure out all the nuances, all the back and forth of that first two, three blot of Beitza, just to figure out why in the world the Beitza is us in the first place. I remember I was once learning Masechta Beitza, and we were sitting and learning the sugya, and somebody came by to talk to me about something. We were visiting Rav, kept talking about something. And we were schmoozing about it. And then, so we were in Beitza, we talked to Beitza a little bit. And then he went away, and he came back like 3 days later. And we were in the same, like, two lines later. We were still learning something in Beitza. So he thought we should be learning a little bit quicker. So his musa that he gave to me was, he says, that's about time that the egg, egg hatched already. So that was his lumdish attack on my fact that I was still two lines later, 48 hours later. Anyway, so the mice, the bottom line is, mission is Beitza should only be Yom Tov is also. Why is it also? So one of the many, many reasons that are presented in the Gemara is that a Beitza should only be Yom Tov is also a Midrabanan, and because of the Gezeira of Mashkin Shazavu, because it's the same thing as liquids that are coming out of a salad. Well, it's not exactly the same thing. It means a cup of orange juice, let's say, if you had an orange to orange juice, that would be like a, it's not like an SAT kind of a question, else that kind of question. Orange to orange juice as what? And now, as chicken is to egg, put the chicken before the egg, and egg before chicken is orange. Orange is like chicken to the egg. So the egg that's a nolda came out of the chicken. So that's like the juice that came out of the orange. So the Gemara says just as Chazal asked the mashkin shazavu, so to the asad the beitza as well. So the Gemara says, well, that sounds like a joke. That's not a gezeira of mashkin shazavu. What are you going to squeeze? We're afraid. Don't eat the egg because we're afraid next you're going to squeeze out the chicken. The guy's going to sit there and try to squeeze the egg out. That's probably not going to happen. So what do you mean? And even if we do that, so who says that's a blah, blah? The whole thing is a joke. So he must say, no, you're right. This is not a firm term. And of course, this is not really Mashin Shizavu. But somehow, the Loshim Bnei Adam, somehow in people's minds, that idea of something emanating from something else, something coming out of something else, so somehow it smacks it the same. It looks a little bit resembles a mash or some kind of a dimion, some kind of a creative imagination you use to compare the two. So therefore they made a gezeira. Don't eat the egg that comes out of the chicken. Gezeira you may come to drink the juice that came out of the orange. So the Gemara says, what? As a gezeira, don't eat the egg, because maybe you're going to come to drink the juice, but drinking the juice itself is only a gezeira. There's nothing wrong with drinking the juice. It's only us that drink the juice. As a gezeira, you make up to squeeze the orange. So this is what we call a classic ein gozer gezeira l'gezeira. Rashi writes that ein gozer gezeira l'gezeira means we're not allowed to make gezeiras l'gezeiras. Why? Because Chazal don't have a right to make gezeiras in the Hefker Belt. We're not going to make life miserable for people. We're supposed to keep the 613 mitzvahs. Chazal have no right to add things to the Torah unless it makes sense, unless there's a purpose. So there's a mitzvah satorah, a su siyav l'torah, mishmat v'smishmati. So the Rambam writes, and as I've done with the Pesach Mishnayos, that Chazal had a tradition all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, the idea of making gezeiras the Rabbah. writes, this idea of making gezeiros to rabbis. It's not that the rabbis one day decided, let's make life difficult, we'll start the asa, right and left, we'll make gezeiros. But Mukta will make gezeiros, she can heat up food on Shabbat, we'll make a million gezeiros. No. Kadosh Baruch Hu explained to Moshe Rabbeinu that it's supposed to associate with her. Chazal, each generation, is supposed to assess what the needs are to try to figure out what is an appropriate gezeira to be made. But you can only make gezeiras if they meet the criteria of making appropriate gezeiras. So Rashi writes that if it's a gezeira li gezeira, it's already so far removed. I'm making a gezeira to protect the derabbanan. So that's already not justified. So you're not allowed to do that. So that's what the Gemara asks in Beitza. Why is Chazal making this wild gezeira? Don't eat the egg on yontif gezeira because you may drink the juice, which in turn is also a gezeira. So the Gemara gives one of those cryptic answers called kulachad gezeira. That this is not a gezeira, this is all included in the same gezeira. That somehow, since people view the eggs and the chickens almost the same as the juice and the fruit, so it was all subsumed under the same gezeira. With the original bays there was some bays there between the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Tanoim, the Institute of Mashi and Shazavu. I have no idea which bays it was. The Rambam writes in his introduction to Mishnah Mishnayos that most of the Dinim Derabbanan, we have absolutely no idea where they come from. We don't know which Beis Din instituted this, which Beis Din instituted that. We know that these are Derabbanan, so we know the days of Moshe Rabbeinu they weren't around. We know that by the days of the Tanaim they were around. That's a good span of, it's a lot of years, it's 15, 16, 1700 years. So when did any Beis Din make the Takana? We have absolutely no idea. So every once in a blue moon, the Gemara will explain to us which Beis Din made a Takana. This Beis Din instituted Muktzah, this Beis Din instituted this, and this Beis Din made Bishalach. The Gemara will tell us here and there, just for interesting historical information, which Beis Din made different Gezeras, but the 99% of the Gezeras, we have absolutely no idea when they were made. Why don't Chazal bother telling us when they made these Gezeras? Wouldn't that be interesting? So the Rambam writes, maybe it would be historically interesting, but the Gemara is not a course in Jewish history. It's not halakhically interesting, it's halakhically actually irrelevant, the Rambam says, because any gezeir der Rabbanan that was made by any reputable Beis Din has the same status of halakha. The Rambam gives a moshel, he says that if Yeshua ben Nun made a gezeira and Rav Ashi made a gezeira, so the source of obligation is identical. If a person violates Rav Ashi's gezeiras and violates Yeshua ben Nun's gezeiras, it's the same level of prohibition. So therefore, Chazal, for halakhic reasons, it wasn't too concerning. Every once in a while, it's interesting. Every once in a while, maybe it's important to know whether a certain gezeira was an older one, a newer one. Sometimes there are important factors to know when a particular gezeira came from. But by and large, Rambam says Chazal weren't interested in giving us these courses in Jewish history to tell us exactly what any given derabbanan came from. So over here, Chazal are telling us that when they made the original gezeira of Mashke Shezavu at some time in Jewish history, so included in this was Beit Shenolda. It was all the same gezeira. It was all Kulachad gezeira. It's always a very, very tricky thing. When do you say Ein Gozer gezeira gezeira? When do you say Kulachad gezeira? I had a Rebbe of mine in high school who, once we were learning the sugya about the Kulachad gezeira, so one of the Tamidim was chepping him. Come on, Rebbe, how do you know? How do you know when to say Kulachad gezeira? So I remember his lashon. He said, it's very complicated. You have to study like 300 cases in the Gemara, and then you can write a PhD on it. So I never followed him up on that. But in case you're interested in writing a PhD, he was making fun of him. So if you want to write a PhD on this topic, you can write a PhD. But I'm not sure what the answer, what the theory is, when you make Kulachad gezeira. So back to the story. So the Gemara has the gezeira of Mashke Shezavu in its extended form in terms of a Beit Shenolda as well. So it's this comparison in the Gemara that now gets the ball rolling for a very, very real Shiloh. This is going to become the background for one of the most common applications of Mashke Shezavu Bizman Hazeh. The Gemara in connecting this din of Beit Shenolda V'yamtif to the sugya Mashke Shezavu, at least one opinion, that's the source of the din. So there's a Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Beitza that talks about the following shaila. What if you have a Beit Shenolda V'yamtif? So it's also, it's according to what's trip, so to speak, for this day it's off limits. It's also, you're not allowed to eat it. What if that Beitza gets mixed up with 100 other Beitzas, 1,000 other Beitzas? So now you have a big tarovis, loads of Beitzas. Most of the Beit Din were from before Yontif. And there's one Beit Din there that was laid on Yontif. What's the din? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, what's the din? Follow Rav. If Rav of the eggs are good, so then you can eat all the eggs. You can make one big omelet, you can eat everything together. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. The Gemara says, you can't eat all the eggs. All the eggs are also to lift the Yontif. Why? Because this is a following problem. This is what's called the Davash Yesh Lamatirin. The Davash Yesh Lamatirin, I feel the outflow bottle. That whenever you have something that's usher, that's going to become mutter, so then the din is, it's never bottle. Davashesh material if it'll be also bottle. You have to wait until the Shasa Heter comes. Why in the world did Chazal make such a din? It's only dindir abundant. Why did Chazal make such a dindir abundant? So there are different opinions. So the simplest reason is what Rashi writes in the Sefer Beitza, that why should you rely on bittel? Bittel is a shvacha kula. Bittel, I know it's there. So why should I rely on it? So maybe you have a little, let's say you have a piece of chas that gets mixed in. Those are the fiyama, today's daf, right? No, gitchin is bottle, right? Okay. So if you have a tarobus, let's say you have a piece of treifus gets mixed into a big pot or something. So what do you tell the guy? No, don't rely on bittul. It's pasnish. It's not right to rely on bittul. Don't rely on bittul because you have to throw out all the food. So therefore, there's a din of bittul, so you're allowed to rely on bittul. But if you have a possibility to avoid relying on bittul, I could just wait it out a few hours, wait till tomorrow. So Rashi says, "Achet techlena biyisa techlena behetter." Why should you rely on bittul and rely on reshvacha kula? Wait till tomorrow. That'll be mahatir and mahatir. It'll be glat lecholadeis. It'll be mutl lechadchilish melchadchila. So whenever you have a davar sheish material, if you'll be off lo bottle, that's Rashi's reason. There's another fascinating reason, but Rashi is a simple pshat. So therefore, the Gemara says if you have one egg that's in a sense treif, so to speak, it's off limits because it's a beit hashnol yantif. If it gets mixed up to 100 other eggs, so wait it out. Wait till tonight. You have to yantif. You can have more for supper tonight. You have to yantif. Everything's going to be mutlachatchila. Why rely on bittul? So that principle, the Gemara says, davar sheish matirin as applies to a beitza. So then, by extension, the Gemara says that applies to mashin shezavu as well. So let's say I have a little bit of mashin shezavu, and they get mixed into something bigger. So normally my reaction would be, well, it's batal barav, who cares, right? It's batal b'shisha, whatever the rules of bittul are. So now the Gemara says, no, that Gemara says, stop, wait, you can't apply bittul here. All of your idea doesn't apply to mashin shezavu, because it falls into the category of davar sheish l'matirin. Mashin shezavu only also for Shabbos or Yontav itself. So after the day's over, it'll be mutlach achila. So let's say, for example, I would have some real mashin shezavu. I'm sure real bona fide super duper mashin shezavu. And those mashin shezavu got mixed into something else. So I cannot look at this through the eyes of regular Yoreday and say it's batal barav, batal b'shisha. No, I feel it'll be also batal. I have to wait it out until after Shabbos or after Yontav is over. It's with this background that the Mordechai in the beginning of the Shabbos discusses a very, very real Shaila. This particular part is not so relevant for us, but for some of the klalim that the Mordechai develops are very, very important for us. The Mordechai discusses the following. People were in the wine-making business. That's what they did for Parnassah. They made wine. So they had the big barrels of wine sitting down in your wine cellar, and they're full of grapes, and the grapes are oozing out during the course of time. And they're becoming. I know nothing about making wine. I'm just describing what the Mordechai is saying. Now the person wants to go down Friday night and take a little bit of wine out of his barrel to make kiddush on it. So the Mordechai raises a red flag. He says, "Wait a second, not so simple." He said, "When did this wine ooze out of the grapes? When did the wine ooze out? The grapes have been sitting in the barrel for the last month. So 99% of the wine that's sitting in this barrel right now came out from before Shabbos." But a little bit of it oozes out. The grapes are constantly oozing out. So some of the wine is constantly squeezing out by itself. So now when I take any given cup of wine, I probably have 0.01% of mashin shezavu in there. Should that bother me or not? So if you would have asked me, says the Mordechai, I would have said, what's the problem? It's bottle, the aleph, alfi, alofi, what's the difference? The only problem is, the Gemara says, mashin shezavu, fil bi'alof, lo bottle. The Gemara says, the davar sheish matir, fil bi'alof, lo bottle. So you can't drink the wine on Friday night, because even though there's a minuscule amount of wine that's oozed out by itself, nobody did any melachas, but even the small amount of wine that oozed out by itself poses a potential problem of a davar sheish matirin, afilu bi'alof lo bottle. That's the kasha of the Mordechai. So the Mordechai gives you the following yisrael. He says, no, this is different. Why? When do we say davar sheish matirin afilu bi'alof lo bottle? That means when the object was usher, and I identified it as being a davar usher. Let's say, for example, I mamish see there's a cup of fruit that oozed out, and I have a cup of juice that came out by itself. And then I see that cup of juice, and I kapaskin, that cup of juice is usher. And now something happens, that some of that juice gets mixed up into the rest of my mutadika juice. So that's a filibi usher. Over here, it was never nikali ayin. It was never yaitzel yaylam. It was what we call bol olam taravis. It came into existence in the state of Tarovis itself. The juice comes right out of the grapes, right into the barrel of wine. So whenever you have a Tarovis, that the Dovra also goes directly into the Dovra Mutter, and there was no recognizability. You didn't see it by itself. It wasn't Nikola Ayin beforehand. That's what's called Bala Olam B'Tarovis. And Bala Olam B'Tarovis is so lenient that a filu B'Dovra Shesh material is bottle. So a brisk of art, says the Mordechai, there are two kinds of Tarovis. There's Tarovis when the Dovra Osir becomes this Ayin and the Dovra Mutter. You have two separate distinct items. The Dovra Osir was over finance, when the Mutter was over finance, when they get mixed up together, that's called Bittul. So normally things are Bittul, except Dovra Shesh material. But when the Dovra Osir never existed in the first place, its very existence, its very entry into this world was in the state of Taroves. That's called Bala Olam V'Taroves. Bala Olam V'Taroves is at the Gomor, even by Davashesh Matir. That's the famous what, the famous Kula of the Monachah. This is going to become very, very helpful for us, or hurtful for us, depending on what angle we're going to end up with this story. This is going to become very, very much really relevant, Lamaisa. But stop for a second and say, is this Klal right? Is this principle cool that when something is bal olam v'taroves, so it's so super duper duper batel that it's mutal legamre and it breaks all rules and all chumras and kumsa, everything, all the chumras fall off. It's a bal olam v'taroves, everything is gebaldik. So there is a discussion in the Rishonim about, it's not the most pleasant discussion, so we'll try to talk about it now with no funny faces. But little kids can make a little funny face if they want. Where the Gemara Maseches Yevamos discusses the following shaila. The Gemara discusses the mitzvah of chalitza. When a person passed away without any children, so the woman falls for chalitza to the brother. So there are different stages that have to be done for chalitza. The main part of chalitza is the removing of the shoe, and there are secondary parts of chalitza also. You have to do the rakika, that the woman spits in front of the husband. She doesn't spit into the shoe. If you ask 9 out of 10 people to tell you she spits into the shoe, they're all wrong, those 9 people. She spits onto the floor. If you're making fun of, she doesn't spit into his face, she spits onto the floor. And then there are a series of psukim that are said, he says something, she says something, everybody else says something, etc. That's the pasha of chalitza. So the part of the mitzvah of chalitza is the rakika, is the spitting. And spitting has to be done in front of Beis Din. So the Gemara says that those who sat on the but didn't be chalitza, you have to make sure that it's not the most pleasant part, but that's the din. So I state in the chumash, the yarch of the fun of it, yes, she has to do a rakika in front of the Beis Din. So the Gemara raises the following shah. The Gemara says, yarka rakka da mahu. All of a sudden, the woman's getting more ready to do a rakika, and she spits onto the floor, in front of the yavam, and it comes out of her mouth is a mouthful of blood. She had a cut in her mouth, and never, it's disgusting, she spits blood on the floor. So now what? So the Gemara says, don't worry about it, it's okay. You know why? Because yevshel adam below tichtuchei rok. There's a little bit of roken, a little bit of saliva in there. There's no shia for the chalit. A little bit, based on a little bit of chalit, of the rakika, it's good enough. So even though 99% of what came out of her mouth is blood, it doesn't make a difference. There's a little bit of tichtuchei rok, a little bit of saliva in there, and that's good enough. I can't debate anymore. So the Rishonim asked a very long shakasha in this. The Rishonim said, wait a second, how is the chalit so good? That little drop of rope that's there should be bottled. It should be bottled the rope because the majority that's coming out of her mouth is blood. Blood is not rope. Blood is something else. So the little bit of rope that's going to be make the rakika kshera should be bottled the rope of the dam that's coming out. That's the kasha to Rishonim is. So strangely enough, the Mordechai himself asked this kasha, and the Mordechai says the answer to the kasha is as follows: that when do we say something is bottled? That's when it's something that was nika b'fnei atzmo. When something is bala olam b'taroves, it's never bottled. Things are never bottled when the bala olam b'taroves. So therefore, the rakika, the saliva retains its original entity, original existence, and therefore the rakika is good, the chalitza is good. So it's a stira galuya. What's the Mordechai talking about? In Masechah Shabbos, he's the one who told you when things are bala olam b'taroves, that's so super duper duper good that breaks all the rules, and even a davashesh matirin is going to be bottled. Whereas in Maseches Chulin, where this Mordechai appears, so he says the exact opposite. He says when things are bala olam b'taroves, so the exact opposite is true, that it's so bad, it's so not bottled, that it's not going to be bottled, it's going to be machshir chalitza because the bittul doesn't kick in at all. So what in the world is the difference between these two cases? So this is not my kasha, this is the gedolei olam, any olam for hundreds of years I've been grappling with this problem, that the steer in the Mordechai. So there's a Neid Yehuda about this, there's a Marat Al-Ghazi about it, all the gedolei acharonim come up with different answers to try to figure out what the solution to this riddle is. So the pashtus advarim is that the answer to this question is as follows, that the word balam taroves means different things in different places. That bala olam taroves in Yevamos, in the case of Rakika, means a natural taroves. When you have a taroves b'teva, if you have a taroves that's bala olam taroves, that's when the Rav Hashem created the world, where you get a cut in your mouth, so there's blood and there's water, and there's blood and spit that get mixed together. So that's that shayach to bittul. That's the bala olam taroves that the Mordechai is alluding to. In Masechah Shabbos, it's not a natural taroves. The Rav Hashem didn't create grapes in a barrel. You took grapes and you put them into a barrel, and now they're squeezing out into the wine. So that's called bala olam taroves. So that's such a gevaldik bittul. That's an unbelievable bittul. That kind of a bittul is bottle even by a filo davar sheyesh matir from the absolute bottle. So again, there's a lot of lomdus in these Mordechais, but when all the dust settles, the Mordechai and Shabbos is what's important for us. We're not learning Yevamos right now, we're learning Shabbos right now. So the bottom line is that if you have a little bit of juice that gets mixed into other juice, it is going to be bottle. What does that mean, it's going to be bottle? So the Mishneh Berurah quotes from the Pirkei Avot, what that means is as follows, that whenever we address something we bottle, we have to ask two questions. First of all, we have to ask, is it a davar sheyesh matir or not? And then number two, we have to ask, well, do you have enough to be involved? Is it shishim? Is it rov? Is it meyam? Masayim? There are different shiurim of bittul. So the Mishneh Berurah quotes to the Pirkei Avot that even if the Mordechai is right, that a little bit of the wine is bottel, but medir b'mamurim if the shishim of the kosher wine. Because if you don't have shishim, then those are the regular dinim of bittul. All the Mordechai said is that the special chumra of davar sheyesh matir doesn't apply, but the regular rules of bittul do apply. And the regular rules of bittul. This is the ABC. This is your day one. This is the Maseches Chulin. Today's Daf Yomi. You require the bittul of shishim. The one doesn't say the number of shishim until the next day, but it's the same principle. Rashi wrote it on the spot. So the Mishneh Berurah says, if you have, let's say, a little bit of grape juice that's squeezing out into a big, big barrel of grape juice, that's fine. If it's just a little bit, it's okay, as long as it's bottle of shishim. That's the rule. That's the amount that you want. So now, with all of that we just said, let's begin to analyze how this plays out for us. The person wants to make themselves a cup of tea on Shabbos, and a good old-style tea, they don't want to use the plastic lemon, they want to use the old-style slice of lemon. But they slice the lemon, they want to slice the lemon, and they throw the slice of lemon into the tea. So far, that's great. Nothing happened. They didn't squeeze. If they would squeeze the lemon into the tea, that would be a problem. If they want to squeeze it onto the sugar, put it onto the tea, that we spoke about in the past. But they want to squeeze it. They don't want to squeeze it. They want to slice it and just plop it into the tea. So there may be bishul issues. Okay, cliche, cliche, it's not too hot, whatever, we'll figure it out. We'll solve the answers of bishul. So the fellow takes this slice of lemon, puts it directly into the tea, and the tea begins to ooze out. So how would we pass it into Shiloh? So our initial reaction would be, oh, yeah, we have a mashkish shizavu shot. We got a big, big problem here. Why? Isn't this mashkish shizavu? After all, the lemon is omer the kaf to drink. I'm not eating the lemon. So it's subject to the gzeirah mashi shezavu. Even though it's happening by itself, I didn't do anything wrong, but the resulting juice should be problematic. So it should be also for me to drink this tea. What do you mean also to drink the tea? But the lemon juice is bottle. What do you mean it's bottle? It's a davar sheyesh matirin. Wait till tomorrow to drink the tea. It's going to cool down with the iced tea tomorrow. So it's a davar sheyesh matirin. So the Mordechai says, no, don't worry about it. This is not a problem with davar sheyesh matirin. Because it's happening by itself. Because it's happening directly into the tea. So the lemon juice never collected.
Why are we saying the bottom of this little
puppy?
Putting the lemon in.
Right, but I'm not being mavata. If I would do an action, a bit lechina, that would be a problem. But I'm putting the lemon juice, I'm putting the lemon into the tea. It's happening by itself. I'm not so sure that's called mavata's lechina. So comes the Mordechai and says, great, gavaldik. The Mordechai says, wonderful. It should be okay because the davar sheyesh matirin, if it will be awful, bottle doesn't apply here.
You can taste the lemon.
Oh, it does. The bomb cashes, we could taste the lemon. So if you can taste the lemon, that's what's called the milsa david l'taima. So the Gemara says that whenever you have something that's put in for the purpose of taste, that trumps all of your there. That kills everything. That's the problem with all the kashrus dishes, the flavoring. But flavoring, there's trefus in the flavoring, so it depends which part of the flavoring. Sometimes there's trefus in the flavoring, but it's not the flavoring part of the flavoring. But if it's the flavoring part of the flavoring, so that's a big, big problem. In case you have no idea what I'm talking about, I don't know either what I'm talking about, that's what they tell me. So if you put lemon into a tea, now you have a milsa david l'taima, and according to what the Mishneh Berurah, the Pirkei Avot said, it should be absolutely awesome. So you can't slice it. Who has ever sliced a piece of lemon into their tea on Shabbos? Because you guys come from a different generation. The old generation. Ah, there you go. Okay. So anyone who was born before the year 1990 probably may have sliced a piece of lemon today. You guys were probably born after that. Okay, make that 1970. Okay. So the bottom line is the poskim right, that's okay. And the poskim right is not as that's right. You're allowed to do this. So I never understood this. Why is this mutter? It's a simple cheshbon. That, and the reason why it's put to the quote, I am the Mordechai and Shabbos. What do you mean I am the Mordechai and Shabbos? What happened to the Pirkei Avot Mishneh Berurah? The fact that the later person qualify this and say, that's not true, that whenever it's a milsa vidal time, whenever it's not talking about shishim, it's a big problem. So I never understood why the modern day post came back that this is okay. What happened? Everything that we're playing out in terms of the sugya should be problematic. That's the Phoenix idea. I posed this question to several gedolim over the years, and I have still not gotten a complete answer. Both conversations that I had ended up getting stopped in the middle, and I'm still waiting for an answer. I was once with Rucham Sauer in L.A. So I was once dancing with him at a Simchas Beis HaShoevim Sukkis, and we were dancing around in a circle. And I figured this is as good a time as any to pose this question to him. So I asked him the question, and then the dance ended or something. He had to go run, he had to move his car, and then that was the end of it. He started thinking about the kashrut, it's a good kashrut, and that was the end of the discussion. Then I met Rav Asher Weiss years later. So I was walking him once to Mincha, and I asked him this kashrut. So he's thinking about the kashrut. Oh, so it's a top Mincha we'll talk about later. 500 people talked to him about something else. And so that question is still in waiting. So someday maybe I'll have a Gila Shechina as to why that's what. If you could do it, Rabbi Sarah, Rabbi Weiss, if I still do it, I'd be happy to.
What's the difference in the Mordechai? What's the basis for being a Halak between Darshish and Latir and versus Bittul at all? I mean, once we're being done on Bittul, then why shouldn't we be doing that to Darshish and Latir?
So he seems to be learning that the Chumrah the Rabban of Darshish and Latir was only said when the degree of Bittul is a low level kind of Bittul. When you have a Bittul that's Balam Tarevis, that's preventing the problem at Chila. Because it's different than life between. Most of the time in life, we solve problems. It means we deal with the existence of the problem exists, and now we're going to try to figure out how to finagle a way out of the problem. But if you can remove the problem at Chila, that's much better. So, Baal Olam Tarev seems to be almost like an undoing of the problem in the first place. It was never really Chal. This was never Chal. So when Chazam made that Gezerah, that Afil Biyaflo Batil, but if it's not a question of being a Batil, it was never. Mitchila, so that would be okay.
Right, then why should there be a difficult?
Right, but the mice, I mean, you wouldn't say that by regular chaz or things like that. You wouldn't say that. Let's say a little bit of chaz oozed out into a pot. You wouldn't say, well, I can taste the chaz, it's okay. You would never say such a thing. So that's the problem. That's where the Mishnah Berurah and the Pirkei Avot are coming from. Anyway, so that's Sorachim. We're still not 100% sure what the answer to that question is. Hopefully, next week we'll try to talk a little bit more about some of these issues.